It was so chaotic. It was so messy. To give birth, we have to feel safe and we have to feel secure. I thought I could doula myself in this situation. Vagina examinations don't really tell you anything about how soon you're going to birth. I could see the surgeon was getting like quite nervous about it. At the end of the day, if you don't have a plan, then the hospital will have a plan for you. This is where I challenge whether or not my birth would have ended up the way that it did.
That was a wild birth story.
Let's remember that, you know, how we birth really matters.
Okay, so we are back for episode 4. Can you believe we're 4 episodes deep? That's probably like 4 hours worth of our voices they've listened to. Almost.
Yeah, and the rest.
Oh my goodness.
I feel like we're going to say that at the beginning of every episode now because we're just like, oh my God, we're doing this. Yeah. We're doing this.
I think we should, because imagine when we're like, welcome to episode 101. Or
do you think we'll still be doing it at that point?
I mean, I'll still be here talking to myself, even if you're not. So it'll be all right.
No. You can't do it on your own. We're a duo. We come as a pair.
Amen. So you better still be here. And the listeners, you better still be here too.
I know. I'm loving the interest that we've got now as we've gone live on socials. Obviously, we're recording in advance a little bit at the moment,
yeah,
aren't we?
Yeah.
But it's just nice to get a bit more interest, I guess.
Yeah. People are intrigued to see what we're all about.
I know.
Yeah.
I can't wait to share our first episode. But anyway, guys, we are back. As Khadija said, episode 4. I definitely got ahead of myself last week saying episode 5. So, yeah, excuse that mishap, but it is episode 4. And we have a really, I'm going to say juicy, and it's, maybe that's a bit
self-indulgent.
Self-indulgent, given it's about me. Wow.
Shows all
but
about
I do
you.
Think it is quite a juicy episode.
Yeah, I do. We're getting into Alexandra's birth story, which if you've already heard about it from our Instagram TV series, you're in for a treat because it's just lovely to listen to all over again. And if you've never heard about it, then buckle up because it's a good one.
We're about to go on a bit of a journey.
Yeah. Shall we play a little game before we get into it?
Yep, let's get into it. It's win or wing of the week.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so my win this week, I can't remember what I did last week, but this week I'm winning again. I taught my toddler how to use chopsticks.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So Rosemary can now use their, so they're rookie chopsticks. They're attached at one end. They're not like the chopsticks you and I would use, but they're starter chopsticks. They're actually the ones I use when I was a kid.
Oh my God, that's so cute.
And he can now eat his dinner or his lunch. He's eaten many a meal. He thinks it's hilarious with chopsticks. So I cannot wait to take him for some sushi because anyone that knows me knows I'm obsessed with sushi. So me and him are going to be sushi besties.
Oh my gosh, that's so cute. I can't even imagine him just having a little stick in his hand, like, oh, yes, please.
Do you know what? I'm going to share on our socials, I'm going to share some pictures of him with the chopsticks because I have got some videos of him and the satisfaction of him picking up like a tomato and putting it in his mouth. He just is like, guys, it's very cute.
Oh, that's amazing.
There we go.
I'm also impressed that he eats a tomato.
Oh, yeah, he lives for it. The pitch to have, he's eating, like, tomatoes, mushrooms, peas, noodles. His palate is eclectic, if that's even the word.
That's very good for a 2- and 3-month-old.
Amen. There we go.
Oh,
that's
lovely.
My
well done, Mama.
Win this week. What about you, lady?
Well, I'm going to use a historical win here, and the reason is because we're obviously going to be getting into the birth story, and I think that, you know, when I thought about recording this episode and talking about it all over again, I do think, like, what I went through, I mean, I think obviously anyone that's been through birth will feel like you're, you know, absolutely invincible after going through birth,
Amen.
I'm sure, no matter what birth you have, but I just look back on my experience and I just feel like to get through that
Yeah.
And like what I went through in my birth, I feel like is just such a win.
Yeah.
Even though it, you know, did not go to plan and, you know, we turned the tables and went for plan B, I still feel like the fact that we got through that plan B, even though we went through all of plan A first, I feel like I'm freaking incredible, to be honest.
I think absolutely. Props to you. You are incredible. Like, thanks. Go on. 100%. I think that's a great win. And it's great to be like reflective of something so like life changing and to be able to see it in a positive way. There are many people that have times where they don't see it so positively, you and I included. However, it's nice to be in a position now where we can both be like, even me, like this many weeks postpartum, I can be like, yep, these things went this way, but you know, we're rocking it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that's a little teaser.
Yeah, that was our wing and win of the week. Woo! Right, so that is another week ready to rock and roll. And this week, like we said, we're talking about Alexandra's birth story. And when we talked about this before, like I mentioned earlier, we did it on Instagram. I had never considered, and I don't know why, that cesareans could be something that, I don't know whether positive is the right word, but I know when I spoke to you about your birth story before, you said I had a really great cesarean. And I remember thinking, sorry, like how do you have a great cesarean? It's major surgery.
Yeah.
You're in a room that's clinical and sterile and you've got a like thingy cap on your head and you're wearing a gown, and yes, you do all of those, like you wear a gown when you have a baby the vaginal way, but how do you have a great cesarean? So anybody that's listening is going to be so intrigued to hear you talk more about your experience, because it was great. It wasn't your first plan, but it was great.
Exactly. And I think that's why I really do, like, from a non-self-indulgent point of view, love sharing my birth story, just because I think it can be quite shocking to hear people having the experience I had.
Yeah.
And, you know, I will caveat this with that, you know, my cesarean wasn't an emergency.
Yeah.
So some of the things I'll be talking about may not be possible in an emergency.
Yeah.
But I just think that given the way the birth system is now, with, you know, more people birthing via inductions or cesareans than ever before, and the balance is certainly in that way, that it's important for every person who's having a birth or who's planning a birth, you should be planning for a cesarean.
Because and not as an emergency,
the statistics
right?
say.
Yeah, like
not necessarily as emergency. You know,
I think it was
you can change your mind.
Yeah, you said sometimes cesareans aren't emergencies, but they're called, like yours maybe wasn't an emergency. However, it's called an emergency because it was unplanned.
Yes, exactly. So because I hadn't decided to have an elective cesarean, it would therefore be put down as an emergency cesarean, but it was not in any way an emergency. I chose to have a cesarean after initially choosing to have a home birth. So it's like completely, completely the other end of the spectrum. But yeah, there's lots to it. And I really just hope by, you know, sharing this story that, you know, one, somebody that's pregnant listening to this will now plan a cesarean, even if it's not their plan A. And two, I might give some ideas on how to make that cesarean as nice as experience as possible, whether you're planning it or whether you're, you know, sorry, whether you're electing for it or whether you're not electing for it, per se.
Okay, so you mentioned that you were going to have a home birth that turned cesarean. So let's talk a little bit about your home birth and the plans for that.
So I always knew that I was going to have a home birth. I am not a fan of hospitals.
Yeah.
I never have been. I've never loved them. Not that anybody loves them.
Yeah.
But I never thought I would just be in a hospital. They make me feel unwell just stepping inside one.
Yeah.
And, you know, to give birth, we have to feel safe and we have to feel secure and we have to be calm and we need to have all of these good hormones running through our bodies, don't we? And I just knew that it wouldn't make me feel good being in hospital. So it was a very, like, easy decision initially.
Okay.
Now, I had to get Jonathan on board a tiny bit. I think only because we were making these decisions when we still had not even been together a year. So, you know, they were very big decisions, and he was learning how to trust me and also wrapping himself, his head around the fact that we were having a baby and I knew what was best in this situation for me and the baby. But we were only literally less than 5-minute drive from the hospital where we were living before we lived here in Surrey. So it was like, if anything, you know, goes wrong, you know, which it can happen in birth. It's rare, but it can happen. Especially if you've been birthing at home, that it's very rare. We could just go, like, it's fine. Do you know what I mean? And I did have a very good home birth team where I was. I'm not going to mention the trust's name because there are things that I've reflected on since, and I don't want to, I don't want to, you know, be negative about anybody in particular. I think it's just how things were. So yeah, I always kind of knew I would have a home birth, and it didn't take long to get Jay on board for that. And yeah, it just meant that we had all of our appointments at home, apart from having scans, which I did have quite a few scans in my first pregnancy, just because I had a suspected ectopic at the beginning, potentially twins. It was all going on very early. So obviously I didn't go on to have twins. And for me, that was great. I was happy with one.
Props to those mums that have twins and triplets, because
my goodness,
my gosh,
Jonathan and I, I just don't think, no, we were happy with the one that we had. And everything was a lot more relaxed. I had like very good continuity of care, the same midwives, I got to know the home birth team. And it just all felt like it was very, it was just very red, it was just for me. And when you look at the statistics, you know, they don't lie. The safest place to give birth is at home. I know that might seem crazy for some people to hear, but that is statistically true. And, you know, I just think most of us go into labor at home, most people go into labor at night, and it's like you should just stay at home as long as possible. Like, let's not interrupt the, you know, the flow of labor. And I was very happy when I eventually started going into labour, which was at the grand total of 43 weeks on the dot, after a couple of glasses of red wine.
Nice.
Which also wasn't actually ideal, although that was on the advice of my midwife. She was like, just have a glass of wine, have a glass of red, just relax, let the oxytocin flow, do some nipple stimulation.
Love it.
Have a little cuddle, you know. Not, she wasn't necessarily even saying, like, you know, have sex. She was just like, just be calm and intimate with your partner and try and get the oxytocin going, which, you know, we did. But I don't think the red wine helped my head, because obviously I hadn't drank for 10 months.
Oh,
I
was
like, a bit waved. But it wasn't much. It was fine. It was fine. So yeah, like, eventually went into labor kind of 43 weeks. I can't even remember specifically like the timings and everything now, but
you were at home.
I was at home. It was in the nighttime. And it continued for 2 days.
My Lord.
We were at home for 43 hours.
What during that time, what was what were you experiencing? Like, just contractions the whole time? Because I haven't had a long labour, so I don't really know what it's like to... what were you doing?
At first, it was fine. You know, I was so excited. I was almost like a little puppy, because it had been... I'd been in prodromal labour for like 3 weeks, which is on-off, kind of on-off starting labour, like a bit like Braxton Hicks, but actually like a bit more that. So it had been kind of like I've been having these kind of contractions and back pain, for about 3 weeks. And it's just where labour then doesn't develop, essentially. But it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. It's a great thing. It's your body getting ready. It's your cervix ripening. You know, it's all of the baby moving into position. So I was already like, I'm tired. I'm really tired that this is not started. So then, you know, the background of that, having been in that position for like 3 weeks, when it kind of continued, I was like, oh my God, Jay, like, we're here. It's going to happen. And I was so excited that I think I got too excited too quickly almost. So when at the beginning, you know, for the first whatever 10 hours or so, I should have, and this is only something that's happened on reflection, I probably should have just chilled a bit and tried to chill because the contractions at that point were very manageable.
Okay.
But I was like, right, get the ball. And I was bouncing around the living room.
This baby's coming out now.
And I was, yeah, I thought like, yeah, wait, this is going to breeze this. I really had such a positive vibe. I was really happy. We were laughing, you know, we got the TENS machine out, figured that out. That was a whole funny, like,
100%.
You know, I think you said that Cameron had been the same. Jonathan was like figuring out the wires, but it was funny. It was fun and it was nice. So there was a lot of faffing and there was a lot of bouncing around for a long time. And I can't remember the specifics and I didn't think it would be worthwhile looking at my notes because I'm just like, let me tell it as, you know, kind of a generalized story. But, you know, then the contractions started picking up and, you know, we were getting to the your 4 contractions in 10 minutes and X minutes apart, you know, whatever they say that you should be doing. And my midwives came over. So I had 2 home birth midwives.
Yeah.
They came over. And they were both the same 2 midwives were with me for 43 hours.
So you called them the literally from the begin, like from the jump?
But I think after about a few hours in, so maybe not exactly 43 hours, but like a few hours in. But it didn't take long for my contractions to ramp up to that time.
Okay.
But then they would get spaced out again. So then they would ramp up again to that time. And I think, again, looking back in a reflection for myself, I was the one that was doing the timer and I think I was too obsessed with the timer.
Right.
But I was like, at what point do I call the midwife?
Yeah.
Like, you know, because I'm questioning myself and doubting and I was like, you know, I really didn't want a free birth. I wanted midwives there.
Yeah.
I didn't really fancy us doing it on our own.
Yeah.
So I was more like concerned to get them there. So I was like, have we hit the 4 in 10 yet? Or whatever it was. So yeah, they came quite early on.
I think that's really important though, because I didn't have, the first time around, I didn't have any of those like counting contractions. So definitely with Renee, I was really het up and like obsessive over, but I don't know when I'm supposed to know when I'm ready to call somebody because I don't know what the intensity of 4 in every 10 minutes is going to feel like.
Mm.
And then I'm just supposed to know this is what it feels like to be like, yep, I'm 100% sure, let's phone them now. So I think... Yeah, like I think it's important to...
It would always have been different, though, because of you having the initial induction.
Yeah.
Your contractions and your, you know, obviously inductions can take a long, long time. Yours happened to be very, very quick, which in my head tells me that your baby was probably ready to kind of come very soon anyway.
Yeah.
But your contractions would have probably felt a lot more ramped up than mine would have done.
But I think...
When you're birthing... Without an induction, it does take a time. It is a real build-up. And my body had been doing that work for 3 weeks without being in labour. Although at that point, I had no idea how many centimetres dilated I was.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I didn't have vaginal examinations. I didn't want them.
Yeah.
Because, again, I think this is a really important point to point out.
Yeah.
Well, that was a mouthful. that, you know, how dilated you are doesn't actually tell you then how quickly you're going to give birth. Somebody can go from 3 centimetres dilated to, you know, 8, 9, 10 centimetres in a very short period of time.
Yeah.
Some people it takes a lot longer. So vaginal examinations don't really tell you anything about how soon you're going to birth. And
that's,
I think
a lot of people
misunderstand that or don't know that information. It's a very old school way of determining it, but I was very keen on not having any vaginal examinations because I knew that.
Yeah.
This is an important point and it will come back to this in my birth story.
Really
important.
That's
why I'm making a big deal out of this. But yeah, so the contractions were ramping up, but I should have been resting during that phase because they still weren't so intense that I couldn't handle anything.
Okay.
You know what I mean, it was fine. Like, things were fine. I had a break between contractions and it was fine. Like, yes, it was painful for a minute, but you can do anything for a minute, right?
100%.
And I kind of prepared myself for that. Like, you know, I can do anything for a minute. So that was fine. But then there was a turning point. The turning point came when I was in the water. So I had a birthing pool at home in our second bedroom and it was set up beautifully. Like, we had some beautiful lights in there. We had like a kind of that solar system light.
Yeah,
we had,
it looked so lovely.
We had cameras from every angle because we were obviously planning to film everything at home.
Yeah.
Camera, phones, different angles. lights in the birthing pool. It was so beautiful.
You've got to share some pictures because it was gorgeous.
I definitely will. I was so thankful that I got to have that time at home because it was very calming. It was exactly as I imagined and exactly as I wanted. But what I found really annoying and something that I'd be keen to change for my second time round, if I'm, you know, lucky enough, is that I understand that the midwives like to, like, check in on you. They like to, you know, listen to the baby every 15 minutes and things like that. I found this quite annoying because it was kind of like something, it was like stopping my flow. Or I'd be like, is everything okay? And I wasn't relaxing, and I'm an overthinker anyway. So I was engaging that kind of frontal cortex of my mind, which is the bit of the brain that you really want to shut off in, you know, in birth.
Yeah.
So hence why it's important for your birth partner to be able to know all of your plans, so you don't have to call on that information. You can just be. So I found that was like putting me off my game a bit. And I did ask the midwives to leave at some point just so that Jay and I could just be in our own, which they were fine with. And he was amazing in many aspects. But there was this turning point and I thought it was time to push.
Okay.
This was, you know, maybe, you know, 20 odd hours in.
Okay.
I thought it was time to push. And I was like, wait, get the midwives to come back. I think I'm going to push.
Okay.
And it was like this really intense pressure to like push. I can't describe it any other way. But it was then excruciatingly painful.
Oh, no.
Like, and I was like, no. I was like, I don't know. So they've all got their torches.
Having
to look up my vagina.
We're going down a cave. Right.
Got the mirror in there just to see. They're like, oh, I think we might be able to see ahead. Oh, no, hang on, not sure. Jonathan's all up in there as well, like,
good
having
for
a
him.
Good look.
Lovely.
Love that for me. And then I was like, no, I don't think it is. Something's happened. Like, and I think what had happened at that point is that Master Jay had turned. I think he was trying to turn to come down into the canal. I think he'd overturned at that point. And then he was back to back.
Okay. Oh, no.
And my goodness.
Oh, no.
Now, listen, back to back is a variation of normal.
Yeah.
It's very common. It's very normal.
Yeah, Renee was
but
back to back for a little bit.
But it is It's known to be a little bit more intense at times.
Yeah.
And at that point, I could not catch a break. Like, I'm just going to lay it out there, honestly. It was very painful. It was not how I imagined. My calmness very much went out the window. I was quite like, oh my God, like, how am I going to get through this? Because there was no respite. And I think that's what really, in the end, like, screwed me over, is there just was no break.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, with contractions, they start and stop. Like, you get to breathe. You can, you know, laugh, dance, whatever you want through them. But I had no break. So then I accepted gas and air.
Okay.
Because I was like, you can have gas and air at home. And I was open to doing that. Although I was quite nervous about doing it because whenever I've had gas and air in the past, I've always been sick.
Yeah.
And true to form, it made me very sick.
Oh, God.
So then I was out the pool.
Yeah.
Did a bit more tensing, dancing around, kept being sick, which just isn't a vibe, like, when you're trying to keep calm. But I knew at this point, like, okay, this is really, like, this is a bit of a challenge now. Like, why is it not happening? And I really, really started to doubt myself. And I think I felt that my midwives were doubting me a bit as well. It was just a bit of an atmosphere. Everyone's a bit like, God, how long is it going to be now? We're, like, you know, coming up to 30 hours in. And at this point, I'd had horrific diarrhea as well.
Yeah.
I couldn't sit down on the toilet, but had to be on the toilet because I had diarrhea.
Yeah.
Jay was holding the bucket for me so I could be sick at the same time. It was so chaotic. It was so messy. It was just like...
It was so real.
No, but, guys. This is not meant to be like this. So I think the midwives at that point were incredibly tired.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't eat or drink. My mouth was so dry.
Probably
from the gas and air.
Probably,
I could not eat or drink. They were trying to feed me honey to give me energy.
Yeah.
Which is a great thing in birth. Like, honey is a great idea.
Yeah.
I didn't have any coconut water, which I wish I did. For some reason, I didn't have any. I couldn't drink water. It made me sick.
Oh my goodness.
So I was so exhausted after like near 30 hours that everything then was just going downhill because my body was like just so exhausted and then wasn't getting any energy and was constantly in pain. You're then in adrenaline mindset, not oxytocin mindset, although it's not a mindset. I felt my hormones were all out of balance, yeah, and I knew it. And now this is where I challenge whether or not my birth would have ended up the way that it did.
Right, okay.
If the midwives hadn't asked me this question. So the midwife suggested a vaginal examination. And in my despair, even though I'd very specifically said, absolutely no vaginal examinations, do not ask me.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were a brilliant team. They were a brilliant team, but they really shouldn't have asked me that question because the baby was fine. There was no issues with the baby. I just wasn't coping with the pain.
Yeah.
But at that point, I hadn't had any paracetamol or anything. I just had the gas and air, which obviously had had, like, for me, a negative effect on me, and I probably wouldn't have it again. But... yeah, they asked me and I, in my despair, accepted. And I had a vaginal examination and I heard the words, only 3 centimetres. I just thought, thank you. I'm out. That was it. My mind had gone. I was so over it. Like, I was just like, no, execute plan B, get me to hospital. I want a cesarean.
And
that had always been my plan, was to have a cesarean.
They threw in the towel for you by telling you that, because they then just...
I feel like, wrecked it. I feel like they threw in the white towel for me. You know, like in, like a boxing arena.
Yeah.
Like, Jonathan, I don't remember, like, what he said at the time, and I know he didn't want to, but he also could see that I was, like, really struggling and in pain in this situation. But obviously, don't forget, like, I'm a doula too, so I know a lot of... I thought I could doula myself in this situation.
Okay.
But the reality is that I could not doula myself.
Yeah.
Because if I was a doula helping somebody in that exact position, I would have had them change positions. I would have had them do certain things that might help the navigation of, you know, the baby come down or come round. I would have tried different things. And my midwives didn't really do that.
Mm.
So I think they were probably just really tired as well, which is fine. It's a human function. But it let me down.
It's a shame,
the process of it. It's just a shame. And I know that if I'd had a doula there myself, they might have been able to, you know, change that around. Because I think one thing to know is when you have a very, very long first stage of labour, which I was still in the first stage of labour, you know, this is 32 hours in. That was the time we called it in, 32 hours.
Yeah.
Was if you have a very, very long first stage of labour, it doesn't mean that you're going to have a very, very long second stage. And in fact, my second stage may have been even quicker because I'd had such a long first stage. And I think if I just had someone like remind me of these things and like keep me going, I feel like I could have probably done it. But I equally know what I was expressing was severe pain. And, you know, that's probably why they asked. So anyway, we went to plan B, which was an elective unplanned cesarean. We went to hospital. I couldn't walk to the ambulance, although I had to. That was horrific. Now, what was good about this is that because I had planned my cesarean with the trust, everybody knew who I was when I went into hospital. So in my planning of my birth, I had already spoken with the lead consultant. I'd already spoken with the head of midwifery. I'd already spoken with the anaesthetist. So I'd spoken with at least 3, I'm going to refer to them as higher ups.
Okay, yeah.
In my planning of my birth, because obviously, plan A was the home birth, but then I was like, well, if I don't go there and if I do come into hospital, this is how I want things to be. So like knowing that I had a bit of a fear of hospital.
Bit
so
of white coat syndrome.
Yeah, I really don't feel comfortable around doctors.
Yeah.
Sorry, just putting it out there. And I really feel a need to be on my guard and in control, which isn't how you want to feel again in birth. So I did all the upfront planning. So I told them if I was having a cesarean, these are the things that I would want.
Right, okay.
And key things being like, if it wasn't an emergency, if it wasn't an emergency, I wanted to have a very slow, gentle cesarean. So them kind of helping the baby come out, but like wriggle out of you.
Right, okay.
So they don't just like get their hands in and yank them out.
Yeah.
Sorry, but that does happen.
Yeah.
I wanted to watch the birth.
Okay.
So I wanted the drapes lowered so that I'd be able to see my son or my daughter like entering the world.
Uh-huh.
That's that's my door going, entering the world.
Yeah.
And I wanted, obviously, the baby to be placed on my chest immediately. So through the drapes, I didn't care about the drapes.
Yeah.
And I wanted to have optimal cord clamping.
Okay.
And optimal cord clamping in a theatre scenario is about a minute.
What's optimal cord clamping for anybody that doesn't know?
So you might have heard the term delayed cord clamping.
Yeah.
Delayed cord clamping, it's like a couple of minutes perhaps. But okay. Optimal cord clamping is waiting for the cord to turn white.
Okay.
And waiting for all of your baby's blood to go from the placenta into the baby. Because this is really important because it holds about a third of your baby's blood volume. It's really good for antibodies and just a generally a great start in life. So I think for me it was imperative that we waited until that baby's blood had gone into my baby.
Yeah.
You know? And I said to my consultant at that time, I was like, if it's a choice, if I'm like bleeding out and I'm really like in danger, then fine, then we make that decision. And of course we, you know, save my
cut
life
that cord.
In the worst
yeah,
scenario
yeah.
and we cut the cord. But if I'm good, we're keeping it on for as long as possible.
Right.
Oh, well, you know, oh, we don't really, you know, do that. We can all maybe do 2 minutes. I was like, listen, these are my wishes.
Yeah.
And this is what we need to try and do. I was very, very headstrong.
Good for you.
And it's because I obviously knew my rights and I was, very, very protective over those things. And I would have taken the blood volume over having, you know, my child placed on my chest straight away.
Yeah.
The cord didn't reach, for example.
Yeah.
And it, and actually that did happen. My cord was very short and my son couldn't actually get right up on top of my chest. He was kind of down here, like more like top of my stomach, chest.
Yeah.
The cord didn't reach.
Yeah.
And I was like, it's fine. Just leave him there. The volume. I need the blood to go into
him. Put the blood first.
So yeah, because of all the pre-planning I'd done, they knew obviously if I came into the hospital, these were the things that we were going to have to, you know, they were going to have to do. And to give credit to them, they did do them.
Yeah.
I was less worried about having lovely music and lovely lights. I couldn't tell you what lights I had. I couldn't tell you what music I had.
Okay.
I don't know. I didn't care. For me, it wasn't about the niceties, the atmosphere. That wasn't important.
It's a long-term benefit to Master J.
For me, it was about those kind of four things. And we did get it. We got 7.5 minutes optimal cord clamping. The cord
Amazing.
Was absolutely white.
Yeah.
And, you know, I could see she was, the surgeon was getting like quite nervous about it. She's like, okay, I'm going to have to cut the cord now. I'm going to give it another 20 seconds.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, we're good.
Yeah.
But yeah, we filmed everything. It was just beautiful. Like, it was beautiful. Like, Jay being there. Don't get me wrong, like the shaking from all the adrenaline and all the drugs that they're pumping you with wasn't nice. I felt like at times I couldn't breathe because you're kind of tilted back, you're kind of tilted on your side.
Okay.
It wasn't a nice feeling, that. But the fact that I didn't know we were having a boy, I thought we might have a girl. I don't know why I thought that, but I was so shocked that we had a boy.
I'd have thought you were having a girl. I've said this before. Based on your bump photos and those hippie bump shapes mean girls and bump shape means boys, I definitely thought you were having a girl.
No, it was... Yeah, I just thought I was. And I remember being like, shut up, I thought you were a boy. Like, that's actually in my birth video. It's so funny.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's kind of how, you know, the birth happened and how it unfolded. And it was... Yeah, it was amazing. It really was quite something.
Have you got any takeaways for anybody that's planning? Obviously, plan your cesarean, even if you're planning a home birth. But now you've had time to reflect
on it. Or even if you're planning a hospital birth.
Yeah.
Or induction, or whatever you want as your plan A. I think everybody should plan the cesarean, and you should always speak to the consultant midwife. You should always speak to the the overall consultant. And have your plans heard by the higher-ups. Because if you are to go into hospital, you want to get the best birth possible. Like, a vaginal birth was no longer possible for me in my scenario because I chose that it was no longer possible.
Yeah.
So I therefore wanted the absolute best cesarean birth that I could have. And if I hadn't have done all of those things, I wouldn't have got it. Like, I just wouldn't have got it because they would have been uneasy in the moment.
Yeah. The takeaway is what you just said, though, because you said that your vaginal birth was no longer a choice for you because you made a choice to do something else. And I think that's the important part. It was you made that choice rather than you were coerced into, forced into, advised with a wagging finger that you had to do Z when you wanted to do Y. And so that's props to your forward planning, in that you had all the options laid out to you on the table. So you just picked up card number two and said, cool, let's go, like, let's go.
Exactly. And I think that that's why it's always possible to make a good situation.
Yeah.
In most situations, obviously there's always going to be emergencies. There's always going to be times where you're like, oh my God, I really don't know what to do. But I think with the right preparation and also, you know, knowing your rights, I think is an incredibly important thing, which you might think, oh God, why do I need to know my rights? Like, the hospital are going to, you know, have my best interest at heart. Like, I'm really sorry to say that, like, in my opinion, hospitals don't have your best interests at heart. That's not me saying that they, you know, want you or your baby to come to harm. Like, obviously they don't, but it's not maybe what you think it is.
You're a number in a system. You're a number in a system.
Yeah, you are. And of course they don't want any, you know, dead mothers or dead babies. Of course they don't. Yeah. But, and in your birthing mind, you'll probably go along with their plan, and that might not be what is best for you, because you know what is best for you. You just might not have unlocked that knowledge within yourself, whether that's because you don't know how to prepare, or, you know, you haven't had that help. That is why I know that I know that the best way to prepare is making sure that you have those conversations and have conversations like this, you know. And if you can afford a doula, then I really think you won't regret it. I think it's an incredible investment. Yeah. Well, I can recommend some amazing
doulas. And you know where Alexandra is when she's ready to pick up that hat again. Woohoo! That was a wild birth story, mate. And props to you for all the forward planning and, you know, like, just advocating for yourself, because that definitely could have gone a completely different way to the way
it did. Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know,
everybody came out safe, happy and healthy.
To an extent, because it may not have gone that way, like I said, if certain things hadn't happened. And I do feel like I was let down. Yeah, so I think at the end of the day, you know, I came out fine. I came out, you know, I survived the cesarean, you know, and I was happy with the experience. It was obviously completely overwhelming, and I was exhausted after, you know, 2 days. It ended up being 42 hours before I had my cesarean. So I did another 10 hours in hospital. I think that's the only thing as well, that is, like, having done all of that and then having a cesarean, you know, it meant my recovery was extremely difficult. And, you know, everybody's recovery from a cesarean is different. Like, some have great recoveries. Yeah. Mine was really tough, and we'll obviously be getting onto postpartum at some point, where we can talk about how that kind of impacted things. But I think, you know, a lot of people, and I think this is a really important point for people to remember, a lot of people, you know, say, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I had a healthy baby. Had a baby that was alive. I had a baby that was safe. And that's like the main focus of their birth, is like, oh yeah, but I had my baby, everything happened to me, but, you know, it's fine because my baby's safe and my baby is okay. And whilst that is obviously very important and very true, I think that we need to remember that we birth really matters as well, because birth will impact the rest of your life. Like, it will impact you forever, how you birth. And I wish more first-time mums had better experiences the first time round, so that then they didn't have to relive trauma if they then choose to have another child, or, you know, they don't have to go into birthing in fear because of how their initial birth went. So I think, yes, of course we want, you know, alive, happy babies, healthy babies, of course, but let's remember that, you know, how we birth really matters too. And that will only, you'll only have the best experience for you if you're informed ultimately. So yeah, that's probably like a key thing I would want people to, you know, really, really take on board.
I think it's really important. And even me, this far, many weeks postpartum, I constantly am like, yeah, but she's cool. And it's like, yeah, but what about you? And it's the, I don't know what the word is. You're not being selfish, but you do sort of put all eyes on the new person, yeah, and kind of forget that you need to vouch for yourself, advocate for yourself again, because yes, the baby is important, but equally, so is your,
it's very true, it's very
China
true.
Or your stomach.
So yeah, that's the story of Master J, and yeah, quite a wild one, I think, anyway. But I hope that it, you know, gives people a bit of confidence that, you know, one, you can try for home births and you can change your mind. It is the safest place to birth, but whether or not you feel it's the safest for you, that's a decision only you can make.
Yeah.
And cesareans really don't have to be as, you know, scary as they are necessarily made out, but you can certainly have a very, very good one if you're informed and you have the right conversations. So I hope that it's been useful in sharing that anyway.
I love that. Amen. I've definitely learned a lot, and it definitely changed the way I planned my birth for Renee, having already heard your birth story in between my two children. And so I hope that, yeah, like you said, somebody else listening is able to make the same choices and advocate for themselves in the way
Thanks
you
so
did.
Thanks so much for listening to my chat.
I think we should wrap it up there, my lady. What do you think? Yeah. Everybody has smashed it. So, as always, if you have maybe just birthed a baby and listened to this because you fancied hearing someone else's birth story, congratulations. If you've washed up and tidied up the kitchen because you only had the nap time to get it done in, then good for you. If you've walked around the park in the rain, do another lap, because just why not? And if you're thinking about having a baby and maybe we've helped you make a new choice about
thanks very much
whether you want
listening.
To or don't want
see
to
you again next
then
week.
Thanks for listening. Hit that subscribe button, everyone. Right, we will catch you later.
See you later. Bye.